Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's me, your favorite showrunner in a galaxy far, far away. I'm taking the reins for this Q&A episode. Welcome to our season three mid-season Q&A episode. I'm here with all my best friends, Rob.
Pew, 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 pew. Woo! Yay!
Most of that got cut off for me.
Q&A! Yes! My favorite time
of
the year.
He's excited he's not taking the reins. Amelia.
Hi.
And Brennan.
Hi, all. Rob, your audio definitely bled through my headphones and into the mic and also made me deaf. Thank you.
Oh, love that. So, we're back with season three, mid-season Q&A. Kind of, not really half season, but three-fourths season.
Yeah, I mean,
kind of, maybe 75%,
70%.
Who fucking knows? So off the top, this is just something that everyone should know. I talk about in our group chat.
Drop that some wet.
All the time, we talk about how, like, they'll, you know, you people will ask me, like, how far away are we through the season? Like, where are we at? And it's always like, well, I thought we would be this far, but I am so bad at knowing how long the things that I plan take that it's completely off the rails now. And so much things have unexpectedly happened that I also have no clue, but about half-ish, half to
three-fourths ish. So for the past couple Q&A sessions, we've done like half discussion and half questions. It's a little bit hard to do that for this episode in particular because we haven't finished the season yet, so we don't know how things are going to turn out. We can't really talk about it.
We're gonna turn out fine.
Oh, yeah, everything's going to be, everything's normal, everything's good, mm-hmm. Everything is fine and normal and
funky
good.
Dunky.
And
we're all emotionally stable, the planet is definitely not going to explode, it's going to be good.
And everyone's going to live, and everyone's going to be happy,
yes.
And everyone's going to turn out fine.
It's a good thing we're attached to zero of the remaining NPCs.
Yeah, exactly. So despite that, before we started into questions, I kind of just wanted to be like, how's everyone feeling? What's our opinions on the season? How's it going so far?
I'm having a great time. Everything is going so well, exactly how I planned. My little boy is so emotionally compromised.
That's a way to put it.
which is just how I like my paladins / guardians. So I'm feeling really good about where we are. I don't want to spoil anything. I don't want to explore things here that are going to be explored in the podcast. But ooh, yikes.
Gotcha.
I'm having a great time with it. I gotta say, it's been really fun to be, you know, back in the player's seat and also to explore a universe that I am relatively familiar with. I've never had a deep dive into the D&D lore, and 7C was something I just kind of Googled as we played. So it's been fun to exist inside of a realm that I've known about and really been fascinated with since I was a young child. Also, I think that, you know, with each season we play off of each other and our improv acting gets even better and better. So I've really enjoyed this season of yelling and laughing and crying with you all. So that's been great. Also, Rob's an excellent DM. I definitely enjoy my character, who's sucking less and less with each episode. That's been really good emotional arc to be less and less dead weight and more portable cannon.
I appreciate it, buddy. Yeah, thank you. I enjoy Rama immensely. And I like his whole arc, and I like the decisions you make. You take some big swings. I've been kind of like secretly counting, and like we're about time for Rama to do something extreme again. You know, we started the season obviously with Rama disobeying all law and order and getting shot out of the sky. Then you shot up a bar, and you know, you've taken some big swings since then. And I just feel like we're about time for you to like go back to jail or something.
Days since Rama's last nonsense.
But I think it'll be more calculated this time. I think you've improved. I am having a great time. It's bizarre, you know, DMing my first season live, but I think it's also been like so hell. Like, I feel like I've gotten a lot better at playing this game just from like one episode to the next. Partly because I get the rare privilege of like listening back to like practically everything I say, with cool sound effects and music behind it, which makes me feel pretty good. But also, like, it allows me to kind of like hear what works and what doesn't work, and it's just been a lot of fun. Yeah, it takes a lot of effort, but it's super worth it. And I have a great time with Star Wars 5e. Y'all are sad as hell, though. I will say it's been interesting. Like,
have you met me?
I have.
Have you met? Well, Kitsa was an anomaly. Like, yeah. So much, like. I don't think I'm capable of making a happy D&D character in the long term.
I feel like Q wasn't the saddest thing in the world. Just,
but Q was That's kind true. Of tragic.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Q was tragic.
He was immensely fucked up, just a little bit less, what's the word I'm looking for?
I didn't cry over Q.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. No, I guess that's fair. No, but yeah, I mean, like it was said in our Discord, gays must be sad in space. So
it's the rule.
No, so I didn't realize the amount of that personal tragedy would play into this campaign. I guess that was my mistake. That was just naivety.
You know, you're a first time DM. It happened.
I was really like, it's gonna be a fun kind of romp through Star Wars, and then it became a mystery and a tragedy, and a thriller.
Yeah, scary.
Yeah, also scary. I didn't anticipate that, but that's from me. That's my fault. That came from in here.
I love it.
Had the fucking
fun and sexy.
Oh wait, that's a spoiler. I don't. Never mind.
This will come out after 24 has gone up, which was the last one we recorded. Yeah. So
I guess is everything on the table then? No spoilers.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably spoilers for episode up to 24 at this point, but if you've listened to it, like, that's where a lot of secrets are revealed, so we can talk pretty openly about it, I think.
In that case,
just warning for that.
Scary is for real. Rob had that, the fucking space vampire.
Oh, Lord.
I like how Rob is like, you know, you guys made this so sad. Meanwhile, there is an evil ghost who wants to possess your body. So, like, just keep that in mind as you're juggling everything else.
Also, we've had our sadness planned from day one.
No, that's true.
From day one.
That is true.
I will say, and I think this kind of goes into one of the questions on here, so I won't go too deep. But I will say, I did not expect, I don't think either of us expected the relationship that Elle and Akala had to be so in-depth when we were first like, huh, wouldn't it be funny if they were like friends?
And like kissed one time, and then it was just like oh, wow. Turns out that was like so much deeper.
Yeah, we're definitely going to cover the evolution of that later. But as far as my thoughts go, I think this is a lot of what I said about season two. But we talk all the time about how like each season so far has been such a major step up from the last one. Just with this season, it's been like step up in characters, step up in story, a step up in editing, and just like general ambiance. And it's just like very cool. Like probably at least once a month, we're always like in our just group chat, we're like, oh my god, guys, this is so good. Like if you listen to the beginning of season 2 versus the beginning of season 3, it is like literal miles of difference between the two of them. And it's just, it's very cool to be on multiple parts of that evolution. And it's been super fun. And again, we don't know how it ends, but like, it's been so fun.
I do.
For every, Amelia knows how it's going to end. Mm-hmm. I would like to know how it ends, but
I can't tell you.
Yeah. Redacted, as one may say. But yeah, so I've been having an absolute romp with it so far. It, like I will scream from the mountaintops how sad I am about everything. And Amelia and I have been just absolutely torturing each other with our Spotify playlists, but it's been like, it's been happening with a smile on my face this entire time. So I'm very happy about it. But yeah, so great. Good opening little discussion.
Let's get to the questions. Let's answer.
Let's get to the questions.
Let's cue. So let's A some cues.
Yeah. So, first of all, I'm just going to say this episode is going to be split up into two parts. The big meaty part is going to go on our normal feed for normal listeners, but we're also going to have probably a 15 to 20 minute extra section for our Red Circle subs going on our exclusive feed. So if you would like to hear your question that got submitted but maybe didn't get answered, maybe become a sub and maybe it was answered there, because we did get a lot of questions. We got so many questions for this one, so we had to pick which ones we wanted to answer first and foremost. So first question we have on our outline, I'm just going to kind of go through really quick. The first question is, how did you all meet and get to know each other? I know we have a lot of new listeners for this season, so we'll go over this really quick, but we have kind of explained this whole story in past Q&A sessions. So basically, long story short, we all went to school together. We went to the University of Tulsa. I knew everyone individually. Rob, Amelia, and Brennan weren't really friends with each other, and I just kind of got them all together for a show. Here we are 3 years later, and our school had just built a brand new podcast studio, and I wanted to start a podcast, and I was like, hey, do you guys want to do a D&D podcast with me? And they were like, hell yeah, let's do it. And yeah, that's a short version. We've definitely covered it before, but I know there are a lot of new listeners in our for our show and in our Discord and stuff, so just wanted to cover that really quick.
It's funny because the only other context that I knew Amelia in was that she was in the sorority that I was the like sweetheart for my junior and senior year. And so like Amelia and I would like, I remember like dancing with you at one of your formals drunk as
good time.
I'll get out.
Yeah.
And not really knowing you. And then it was like, yeah, like, do you want to come play D&D? And then I was like, oh, hey.
Hi, what's
good
up?
Good to see you. Yeah. And I made your guys' food for like 2.5 years.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, you helped me afford law school, so.
You're welcome. I specifically am telling you you're welcome for single-handedly getting you through law school.
Mm-hmm. Yes. No. Oh, that's what. I intend all the credit to go to you.
Yeah. So I knew Amelia through housing staff. We worked on the same in the same dorm. I knew Rob through doing our media lab, like broadcasting club.
Yeah.
And I knew Brennan from class and just hanging out. But yeah, go ahead, Rob.
I was gonna say also, yeah, like me and yeah, like a few others, like we're really pushing hard for the podcast studio, and I was also like managing the podcast studio for a number of time, and then. When I wasn't, I was like, oh, yeah, I should actually still use this. And we did.
I should actually do it. Cool. So, yeah, if you want more on that story, go listen to our old Q&As. You'll find more of the story there. So, second question. How long before episode releases do you all record? Is it a few days or a week or whatever? So, we try to record ahead. We try, like, in an ideal world, I usually like to have episodes recorded a few weeks before they go out, but a lot recently it's been like record on Sunday and then the episode's going out on Wednesday and I have 2 days to edit it. We're a little bit ahead right now, which is nice, but just scheduling stuff with all of us across 4 different time zones and us having jobs in law school and stuff, it's hard to do that. So it varies is the answer to that question. So you can see a little bit into our behind the curtain backstage production or whatever. anyone else have anything to add to that? I don't think so. Probably not.
No.
Cool. So kind of a group question for this next one. Do y'all naturally develop combined elements of your backstories through sessions, or do you plan that out ahead in session zero, for example, with prior relationships of your characters? So pretty much the only time we've done this is with El and Akala. Am I correct in that? We haven't had any other character interwoving, intertwining
not for,
character backstory?
I think that's correct.
Yeah. So, like, to kind of explain the evolution of what this has now become, whenever we were first making our characters, Amelia and I were like, okay, we both want to be Jedi. So do we know each other? Do we have a relationship with each other? And I think we first, I haven't actually watched all of this show, but I think we first defined it as like an Adora Catra situation from She-Ra, where like they knew each other and there was sexual tension and all this stuff. Because I think one of the first things we asked for when Rob was asking us, like, what do you guys want to see in the campaign? We were both like, forbidden Jedi love. And oh my God, did we get that? But yeah, it has definitely evolved from there. I think we actually didn't nail down the details until after we had recorded a few episodes, right? Yeah. We literally sat down and had a meeting after we recorded episode one or two.
Because like all of you are pretty like, I would say that like all of us tend to focus more about like what we want to do in the campaign more than we focus on like what happened in the past. I would say like when we mostly make our characters, like it's always been like, oh yeah, we kind of think about like how we got here in the retrospect. Maybe that's just me, but yeah.
No, so I mean to this day, oh sorry.
No, go for it.
I was going to say, I mean to this day, I don't have like a comprehensive backstory to Elle. I have like a string of texts that I've sent Rob over the course of however long we've been recording. Every now and then he's like, hey, do you have like more info? And I was like, yeah, maybe like this thing or this other thing. But I know for a fact that Han has so much more Akala lore about Elle that I'm also like, what don't I even know about Elle? And about like what happened? Because I was just like, I don't know.
No,
they
yeah.
were there. They were vibing. They kissed. It was great. What happened after wasn't so great.
Yeah. Yeah, I, a few weeks ago, sent Rob a 5-page single-spaced Akala lore dump just because I wanted to write about her.
Yeah.
And I, like, my initial backstory for her was literally, like, 2 paragraphs of, like, she was born on a different planet and has parents, and that was pretty much it. So I just wanted to dive a little deeper. And in my email, I think, to Rob, I literally wrote in the body of it, was like, what did I say? Hold on, let me pull it up. I said something like, here we go. Didn't think I would write so much about Elle in this, but shrug, your girl's traumatized, what can I say? So yeah, love that.
Yeah.
I want to know the forbidden Elle lore.
I mean, it's not even like, it's just Elle from Akala's perspective. So it's not like I'm writing facts about Elle. Oh,
like so much
Elle
about like
I
his
know.
Rippling muscles. So strong and sweet, and he carries my books.
Exactly.
That kind of stuff.
I was actually thinking about this problem when I was thinking about Cornelius's character, because I was like, what is Cornelius's perspective on Elle, and like, what was that relationship like? And I mean, not to co-opt this, but I was thinking like, okay, like Elle's backstory, like the Jedi Master is pretty important, but like, when we kind of talked about it, it was kind of just like, man, I don't know. Like, we can just figure that out, like, once we get there. And so we just rolled with it. So, yeah. And I got to tell you more progressively about how you died the first time, which was interesting.
Yeah.
So it's a mix of both to answer the question.
And there's also, like, a, you know, like, an inherent amount of trust that I think is necessary to play D&D like that.
Yeah.
Like, for all to be like, what was your Jedi Master like? And I was like, I don't know. I'm sure you'll create something great. And then for Rob to be like, oh, this is Cornelius. And it's like, ah, he's perfect. I didn't even have anything imagined, but he's exactly what I imagined. Like, it couldn't have been better. And so that's something that it's always nice to be able to do with when you're playing with people that you trust.
Yeah. Yeah.
Giving away that control.
That's actually a very high compliment. I'm going to take that one right to the bank. Yeah, thanks. I'm glad that Cornelius was such a hit. Because backstories can be a funny thing, especially when you're like playing somebody's like parent character.
Yeah. And well, I had like an entirely different backstory for Elle at first, and then I changed it.
Yeah.
So that was.
I want to know the forbidden Elle lore that it was like a completely
different character. I don't remember what made me change it. I don't know if it was specifically having a relationship with Akla, or I think it was. I'm trying to remember. But yeah, it was like growing up in the slums of Coruscant, like as an orphan who's kind of. And that was the thing, is that when Elle had faked his death, it was just so he could go back and take care of like the people he grew up with, because he wasn't really able to do that in the same way when he was a Jedi. But none of that exists anymore. So fuck them kids.
Yeah. But it's interesting that you had that backstory, and I had kind of forgotten about that. And I think I actually internalized some of that when I when I was planning the last episode with the news broadcast. Yeah. I'll keep that a little bit vague, but there's some of that energy still lingering within the campaign, I think.
Oh, for sure.
Maybe we should get farther past this question, because we're very quickly just talking about the campaign.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Okay,
yeah, we should do that in the Q&A.
So next question is for you, Rob. How do you balance or incorporate your ideas and your own world building for the story and landscape setting with existing lore?
Well, I prepared a lot before we ever sat down and even had a session zero for like what a Star Wars world would be like. And the first thing I kind of did was just ask all of you what you wanted. And the overwhelming response was like city vibe. And so like once that was established, it was kind of like, well, if we play this before the fall of the Jedi Order, then we have the most leeway of just making up whatever we want, because nobody really has a firm idea of what life was like during like the Old Republic, you know, unless you've played like the Knights of the Old Republic games, but you know, those are like decades old RPGs, right? So more or less, there's no like canon about this time. So I can have a lot of things be true and have a lot of people exist with it being completely original and not conflicting with any canon. And so from that base, I can more or less just use Star Wars as like a color palette and just have my own world to play with. I just have the Star Wars trappings and kind of the traditional things that are true. And then, you know, it's like, okay, like if kyber crystals are real and there are these like, you know, super crazy high powered energy converters that are also force attuned objects, like where else would they show up? Like, oh, you know, under the ground as like a thing that channels power, you know, like. And that's, you just build that organically. And I just kind of write stuff down. And then once we play, we just have to go new places. And so I just kind of make stuff up, you know, a couple weeks beforehand based on what we're doing and just try to have fun. But Star Wars is kind of easy in that way that like you could really just have anything be true and have any location exist as long as it's like remotely plausible with like the theme and the tone of the story. So just been kind of my playground.
Yeah, I like that metaphor of it being a color palette. That's a very good analog for it. Just using the tools to create your own little artistic masterpiece. Cool. You have anything else on that?
I mean, some things are taken directly from aspects of the canon. I do rely on the wiki a lot, like the Star Wars wiki a ton. The Oshla, the Bogan, and the Bendu are all real things. The Bendu is a real character. He's even showed up in places before, but my version of him is different. And I just kind of take liberties with things sometimes. Like, there's things I don't talk about that are technically canon, but just are bummers. There's, like...
Midichlorians.
Midichlorians are bummers. Slavery in the galaxy is, like, a major bummer that I just don't care to interact with.
Slavery is a major bummer.
Yeah. gosh, I know it's like an eloquent way to express that.
Yeah,
but,
I know.
I'm
just joshing you.
Yeah, and then there's like, I mean, there's also like a lot of downsizing I have to do. Like, when you think about Coruscant, like Coruscant is a whole planet that is one city. And when you're trying to downsize that into like discrete locations, there's a lot of it that gets missed. So I try to do my best with just like giving you guys a limited space to work with, but like that space is still massive in terms of like a world building scale. So like I've had to keep the scale smaller than a traditional Star Wars story to start, just to like orient us, because I think it'd be really confusing otherwise, like being in a city location. But that's about it. So I just kind of play around then. And then all the droids and technology stuff, it's just like, you know, I just theme everything off of what somebody in like 1970 would think would be cool in a few thousand years. So, yeah, that's why you get toaster droids. So.
Love the toaster droids. Love the gonk droids. Cool. So next one is about 5e, or Star Wars 5e is kind of a system in itself. The Star Wars 5e hack that you've been using seems to require a fair bit more system mastery, but also gives the PCs more capabilities. DM, have you had to adjust how you prepare for your encounters, players? How has that influenced how you approach playing your own characters?
I don't even know if this is because of the system or because of just the players, but definitely I've had to make my encounters progressively more difficult to deal with because you guys are really strong. Turns out being a Mandalorian and two Jedi is like a very
powerful combo.
It's no joke. Yeah, you guys find ways to eat through HP. And you guys don't have a healer, and like you still are typically pretty fine with health points. Oh, I don't know.
Yeah. See, like I was trying to research this the other day about, because most of the things that are in Star Wars 5e have a pretty clear analog to just regular D&D 5e.
Yeah.
But the class that I play is called the Sentinel, which doesn't really have a clear analog to any other D&D class. And it's also kind of really OP because I am also, like, I'm a melee fighter and also a spellcaster. So I do have healing spells. Like, I have a couple of them, but I haven't really needed them. I think I've used them maybe a total of two or three times.
I mean, you've gone down two or three times,
well,
too.
And, yeah. But you also have, like, don't you have, like, Jack of all trades? And you get, yeah. And because you're melee, like, you get the spellcasting benefit and the double attack benefit, which does not happen in 5e. And
I'm also, if we get up to level 7, I think I'm going to get, like, a triple attack.
Type. At level 7?
Yeah, I think so. I'll have to double check that. But, yeah, I have, yeah, the bard, Jack of all trades. I have, I don't remember what they're called. They're a warlock thing. They're called Sentinel Ideals in this, which is like
basically your Eldritch Invocations.
Yeah. Yes. Whatever. Yes. But yeah. So like my class, like I didn't realize how OP it was until I went on Reddit and saw people talking about it, being like, "Yeah, this doesn't really have a real analog because it's taken pieces from every class, basically." So I've mostly been using my spells to just kind of. I think this is. Exemplified in I forget what episode it was, whenever we had to run 300 feet across a room. I basically just like supporting myself and doing like abilities and stuff, and then not using them for really like actual attacks. I think I do have like phase throw is a cantrip for me, and it's really powerful because of the Sentinel subclass that I chose.
It's Eldritch Blast is the thing.
Yeah
And it's, Eldritch Blast in the hands of a warlock.
Yeah, it's like, it's great. I didn't really do a whole lot of research going into it. I just kind of chose one based off of the log lines that were on the Star Wars 5e website, but it's done a lot of good for me.
The thing is, I saw your class and I wanted your class, but because I procrastinate everything, you had already picked Sentinel, and so I couldn't do it
Maybe it's nice to be prepared sometimes.
No, I'm good with my smite slots. Thank you.
True.
So from my class and the way that it it interacts, it's interesting because shooting guns akimbo is not a super D&D type thing, but it's fun to play around with the Star Wars mechanics because, you know, if you ever look at the prequels, you've got like Jango Fett usually he's got two blasters and they pop off, so it's fun playing something that is made to emulate what you would think Star Wars looks like, for sure. So the other thing I like is as I keep like leveling up the fighter. I actually don't know if I've ever played a fighter in D&D. So I'm like, a fighter's, I don't know how much of this is what they're supposed to be capable of and how much of this is D&D stuff or Star Wars stuff. The other thing that's fun is the gadgets I get. So as a Mandalorian, you get, you know, instead of like the Dungeoneering's pack, you get frickin' thermal detonators or, you know, whatever you want. So I decided to go with remote activated mines, kind of like in Lego Star Wars. So that's been
Which
fun.
Were very useful. I mean, I think the Mandalorian's cool because I think that, like, yeah, so, like, I mean, you've gotten, like, various suit upgrades. You've gotten, like, a better weapon, but you also just, like, get cool accoutrements, too. Like, you get, like, your ship and you get, you have Baskar Steel right now that you haven't used. But, yeah, it's cool. I like how it's been adapted from 5e.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that a lot because I really want to do with it.
We need someone to we no longer have our contact who's good at making things.
That's also true. Normally I would be like, hey Rosie, let's blow shit up, but
I mean, if you flirt with Bronze a little more, I'm sure
he'll
be able to do something for you.
I don't flirt with anybody intentionally except for like one time, maybe Cecil. Y'all are projecting that onto my character.
We should probably move to the next question. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. What is your favorite failed role this season?
Great question.
Okay. So I was thinking about this and I was trying to remember one specific role, but I think it was when we were in the Arrakid estate and I just kept getting nat ones and I got like 4 or 5 at once. Can that be my favorite role? Because literally, what the fuck?
Yeah, that was
me forgetting how to use my lightsaber because I haven't turned it on properly in 3 years.
Yeah, that was that like turned like a climactic like reveal into like a real gut punch of like
it was so cool. The first combat we did with it was like, ah, yeah, and then it was just I got too in my head about it. The beginner's luck had worn off. Mm-hmm.
Which is like kind of like it's a very like synchronistic way for the game to be like, like, yeah, like, you used to be really good at this, but now, like, the person that's actually been doing it for a few years is kind of holding it down while you're struggling to remember how this all works, you know?
Yeah, the weighting is different, because, you know, with the double saber, the weight's all in the center. With, you know, a staff, it's different. You got to get used to it.
Yeah.
Also, the staff hits things. Lightsaber goes through things. Very different vibe.
I think my favorite failed role is probably the numerous times that all the enemies failed to open the garage door quickly after Rama shot it.
That was good.
Because it's just like this idea of like these bad guys have just done something very bad and killed this NPC that we love and taken her metaphorical heart and are making an escape, and it's all of a sudden they're fucking losing it at this door, ramming their vehicle into it, losing time, people are dying. It's like, fuck, 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 get out of here. Dice didn't want it to happen, so.
The only one I can really remember that Akla has had is the one when I think it was a stealth roll at the beginning of the Veltarrakiad when we were all in the crates and she just literally fucking fell over and we had to get out of that one. I think she had a few at the beginning of the campaign that were like persuasion rolls or something that she fell or that she failed. I just can't remember them, so my answer is gonna be the crate one.
I'm gonna see if I have anything in my notes.
So my favorite one for Rama was was during the 300-foot chase or whatever, when I was like, hey Rob, what's the DC if I try and find an item Mandalorian jetpack? And he's like, pretty tiny, buddy. And I was like, never tell me the odds! And then absolutely failed it. It felt like a good little microcosm of Rama DM play. Yeah. It's like, this is going to be awesome. There's a 1 out of 18 chance.
Yeah. That's a tough one. I feel like Rama's rolled the most consistent out of all the players. I think that he probably has had the least. I think you've also had the least crits, though.
It's that sweet, sweet digital die.
Yeah, you roll really consistent in the middle.
Google being really neutral.
I'm sorry. I'm like looking through past notes to, like, you know, just to see if I had anything interesting about ones. And I totally forgot. Do Elle's eyes still glow whenever they're happy?
I keep seeing that on my character sheet and forgetting about it.
But you two are the saddest fuckers in the world.
But we just kissed, though.
So our eyes were glowing.
It seemed sad as hell. I don't know. I mean,
it was good for just a moment. And then it was sad.
I think we should break on.
Well, if you guys both closed your eyes when you kissed.
Saw Cecil. Oh, that's true.
Also, can we just, like, I'm looking back. I'm sorry to, like, distract, but looking through the notes, and it's like, Oko's in her Hot Topic phase. The Hive, possible lead. Did she join a cult? And it's just, like, the red maw, and it's, like, no idea what the fuck this is with the drawing of it. And, oh, how. That's back in episode 6.
Yeah, well. Also, Akula just became a Jedi Knight, so that was pretty satisfying.
That's true. Probably. Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, it's been happening. I'll be more aware of it and try to narrate it when it does happen, but you guys can also be in charge of that a little bit.
That's like a wild magic type thing, right? Where if we use our powers enough that something weird happens?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You guys are probably due for one, but there's just been other stuff to take care of, so...
Yeah, I want more wild magic. It's so chaotic. I love it.
I want to cast Fireball on myself whenever I roll a nat one.
Oh, no. No thank you for that.
That's what's on the D&D wild magic table. That's what happens if you roll a 1. I didn't just make that up.
No, I believe you.
No, I was looking at Rob's face. He was very judgmental in that moment.
I was just kind of thinking, like, for what purpose? Like, why...
I don't make the wild magic rule.
No, that's fair. No, there is. I do like random tables. Random tables do make things fun, and that is a random table roll. You guys just both rolled the same thing, so you guys' eyes glow together.
Yeah. This is like a D4, right?
Yeah, it was like that. Pretty low.
Yeah. Cool. This next question is probably my favorite out of all of them, and I love all of our viewers equally, but this was a great question. If Starfellows was animated by an anime studio for the next Star Wars vision set, which studio would you want to animate it, or what style do you think it would take? I have an answer for this if nobody else does.
You go first.
So I haven't actually seen Star Wars Visions. I'm making my way through the Star Wars shows right now. But I think a really great style slash like similar tonality show would be Arcane on Netflix. It's not 2D animation, it's 3D animation, but I love that style so much. I think the tone of Arcane is pretty similar to what we're doing in this season, so I think that would be a great visual. And like, I don't know, I don't want to say that like whenever I picture like 2D animated shows, because I don't watch that much anime, like, to begin with, I mostly think of like children's shows. So like just an Avatar style type show, I feel like would be too juvenile, I think, for what we're doing. But that's just my own worldview. So if anyone else has any conflicting.
So my first thought would be the studio, it was called Sunrise, I think. Not sure what it's called now, but the studio that made Cowboy Bebop. One, because it's one of my favorite TV shows, but two, similar vibe and space and such, and that it's it sounds just giddy as fuck. It's like, yeah, space cowboy, bebop, jazz, fun space romp. But there's a lot of, like, it's half about, like, depression and moving on from hard parts of life and trying to move on from a life they used to live. And it's the kind of vibe I like to go for a lot when I do tell stories, because I think it lends itself well in tone to people coming together with tragic backstories and then trying to develop strong character arcs in like Monster Week settings. It's similar to, I think, your standard D&D type setup. Also, the animation itself, I think, works pretty well, because if you try and make it like too realistic looking or too, too just on the nose, it doesn't age as well. But you don't want it to be too cartoony, especially with some of the bullshit that happens in this season. You know, like as Han said, I mean, imagine if you're watching Avatar: The Last Airbender style animation and then just blood and guts shoot out in Arrakia estate.
I mean, what I will say to that, though, is the Critical Role Vox Machina show just came out, and I think it's, like, almost identical to the Avatar The Last Airbender style, and it works really well.
Wow.
I think they're a little less serious in tone than we would want to go for, because it's pretty, like, R-rated, jokey, but also they're going on an adventure, but, not to completely contradict you, but yeah.
I think I would disagree with the style being similar, like really close to Avatar: The Last Airbender, but I do agree with your other points. But also, Invincible is like in that same era.
Could be like was a good medium ground. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. I do agree, because I haven't watched Arcane, but everything I've seen from it, I think that would be where I put the winner. But for something that is still animated and has that sort of, you know, suspension of disbelief kind of quality, but is also like blood and guts and serious shit, I think Invincible really captures that as well.
Yeah, like Invincible, I think like some of the animated Batman shows, like I think could have interesting drawing styles like that. That would still
capture. Can we do this in the Harley Quinn style, please?
Be good. Mask of the Phantasm would be good. The Killing Joke would also be good. Yeah. The animated series from the 90s.
The problem is, like, my favorite animated animation studio would, like, absolutely not be the right style for this at all, which is Cartoon Saloon.
I'm not familiar, but just by name alone, seems like probably not.
Yeah, what do they do?
The Secret of Kells, Song of the Sea, Wolfwalkers. It's an Irish-based animation studio that usually does things with like folklore. It's very much focused on kids. It's 2D, a lot of like figure ground patterns. It looks kind of like watching a storybook.
I love Song of the Sea. That is one of my favorite movies. It's beautiful. I absolutely love it. It's good Irish folklore. Yeah, that would be a little weird. I mean, one of my favorite studios ever is Studio Ghibli, but this would be a really weird Ghibli film, so I feel you on that one.
Mm-hmm. All right, should we hit the rapid fire?
Yeah, so these are just kind of rapid fire questions, style, less discussion type. What other nerdy kinds of things are you all into? Magic the Gathering, any other TTRPG systems you guys want to try in the future? I'll say that I'm a video gamer. I think Rob is also a video gamer.
That's kind of really the
only like nerdy other thing that I would say I'm into besides all this stuff. I guess I work in podcasts, if you want to consider that nerdy. I do podcasts for my full-time job. So that, I don't know, if you want to consider tech or whatever nerdy, then sure.
Yeah, as far as other TTRPG systems, thinking in the future and like what we would play for the season after this, like, I mean, I cannot name all of them that like crossed my mind for things that would be fun to play.
I really want to do a Kids on Broomsticks. We have to do a Kids on Broomsticks.
That would be so cute.
Short, like short thing.
Yeah, Blaze in the Dark, City of Mist, which I've just started getting into. There's a lot of options. Call I don't of think I do that much nerdy stuff that isn't somehow related to TTRPGs though.
Yeah, I maybe should have separated this into two separate questions. I think this is two separate questions. The nerdy thing.
I'm too much of a jock for that. Sorry.
I don't think I do much nerdy stuff, too much nerdy stuff outside TTRPGs. I spend a lot of time on those. I'm DMing like 4 campaigns for different friends. So I spend a lot of time with those. The one thing, though, is I really, really love Yu-Gi-Oh! Out of nostalgia. And same. I started a Yu-Gi-Oh! League my senior year of college among about a third of housing staff. And we still have the group chat from it. We still post Yu-Gi-Oh! Memes. So that was fun.
We'll have to play some time, because I also played Yu-Gi-Oh! In college.
I don't really do nerdy stuff. I did start a Yu-Gi-Oh! League, but aside from that...
I kid you not, whenever we had breaks from housing, every other day during housing training, which is like I don't even know. It's like 10, 11, 12 days long. It's longer, way longer than a week. We'd go to the different vintage stocks in town. It's a group of like 8 to find different cards.
Just quickly, yeah, I am a real gamer, TM. I do like anime and manga. Big fan of Berserk. And also like just other shonen. I am a huge sports nerd, specifically for basketball. I've been watching the NBA finals. That's been my nerd stuff. I also, my job is also sports related. And I work, I work basically for a sports agency. And I'm a lawyer, so I'm constantly reading the nerdiest shit in history, which is just people analyzing the meta around our rules, which are already, you know, complicated as is. So it's like, you know, I'm never not doing nerd shit. It's just whatever flavor is available at the time. But that's about it.
See, I feel like most nerds would not consider sports and becoming a lawyer nerdy things, but that's just me. I don't know.
I mean, I have to look at sports from a very academic angle. So I have to do like statistical analysis and like compare contracts and like look at the collective bargaining agreements and stuff like that.
You can be a sports nerd.
Yeah, I am a sports nerd. Yeah. I mean,
you can be a nerd about anything.
Exactly. Yeah. My high school quote was a quote from Will Wheaton that was very long-winded, almost didn't fit on the page, but was essentially just like, nerd is just a term for somebody that's really interested in somebody, so everybody's kind of a nerd about something, and so that's just kind of how I approach it. But anyway. Wow,
can't believe I have the same mindset as Will Wheaton.
Tragic.
out of curiosity, when you guys play, do you play on like Roll20 or is it mostly Theater of the Mind? We mostly stick to Theater of the Mind. We have made maps and spreadsheets for things, which, speaking of, I think we're about to do some very spreadsheet intense stuff in the episode we're about to record. But yeah, mostly Theater of the Mind when it comes to most scenarios.
Yeah. The only thing, I mean, I have a personal goal to have at least one session with something digital, with some sort of digital map, at least sometime in this campaign. It's the only thing keeping us from doing it is that it's a huge time investment to learn the system, and for me personally to like design something, it also takes a whole lot of time, and that's not my skill set, and also don't have a whole lot of time for it. So it's just one of those things where it's like we would love to do, but at the moment have to wait for the right time to start doing that.
It's also not audio friendly. We don't upload anything on YouTube. We don't like, we have a visual element for when we make TikToks and stuff, but we don't do video distribution. So like just listening to people talking about a map that other people can't see, not super interesting. So we stick to not doing that. Cool. We already kind of covered this a little bit. Are there other systems or settings that you guys would be interested in playing? I'm currently looking at Powered by the Apocalypse systems for next time I GM, because that's the one I'm most familiar with outside of D&D. I know Amelia just suggested some. Is anyone else?
I mean, besides Kids on Broomsticks, which I really want to run because god damn it, like we have to reclaim Wizard High School from J.K. Rowling. Because she is not fit to manage the wizard fandom niche, and I'm tired of it. So I want to make a fucking wizard high school that has running toilets, where people don't have to shit on the floor. That isn't just a blatant way to sort kids into power structures. Besides that, I do want to play in 5e again sometime soon, because I haven't done that in a while. Just vanilla 5e.
I have always been intrigued by Call of Cthulhu, which is ironic because I'm scared of my own shadow as a person. But you know, sometimes you gotta have some personal growth. I really, really love Traveler. Although it would be kind of weird to do back to back with Star Wars, so I probably wouldn't do that one.
Cool. Next one. Are you guys considering taking in a guest, since some of you have appeared and interacted with other shows and podcasts? We've had guests before. 2 guests, I think, total. Just guest GMs as one-shots for in-between seasons when we kind of needed some extra room to get ready for season 2. We might do that again if we can find someone cool and have the time for it and can plan accordingly. I know we've made some cool D&D friends recently since last time we've had guests on the show. I would love to. I think it would be fun. I think it would be good cross promotion for everybody. Yeah, I would love to do that.
We have had some guest voice acting. Like season one had a guest voice actor.
Yes, my friend Kyle was very gracious enough, very good actor to lend his voice for season one villain. And I would also be open to doing that again if we wanted to have more guest voices, though that just kind of takes preparation, some extra preparation. But yeah.
Yeah, I'd be open to it. I'm always happy to play with new people. I also just like I'm not the person that has these connections. I just... I spend most of my life in a library. I need to stress this enough that most of my life is not interesting. I am a professional student.
Amazing. All right. Last rapid fire question. How many muns could a monkey key if a monkey could key muns?
I think a monkey could key a kilo of muns if a monkey could key muns.
Well, if he was the very best, like no one ever was, then I think he could probably catch all of the mons if a monkey could key some mons.
Well said. I don't think I would have said it any other way.
Figured it out. Well, cool. You thought you were going to stump us. No. Bills and I came with the heat.
Hell yeah.
Amazing. Cool. So that is the end of our Q&A episode for our regular feed. If you want to stick around for some other questions that you think you might be missing, come become a Red Circle subscriber on I don't know. I lost my train of thought. Come be a Red Circle subscriber. We will have a second part of this episode for you. Super easy to become a subscriber. There's a link at the bottom of every episode that says support this podcast, and you should get access if you become a subscriber. But yeah, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you in part two.
Bye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.